Has anything changed at home? Sweet liberty.
Listening to Jackie Patru and Sweet Liberty. And now, here's your host, Jackie Patru.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much for joining us tonight on Sweet Liberty. This is the 26th, yes, Alan?
27th, I think.
Yeah. Oh, 27th, are you sure?
Yep.
Oh, I just lost another day. It's Wednesday, the 27th of July. You were right, Alan. I had to check my calendar. It's the 27th of July in the year 2005, folks. And as you obviously are aware, Alan Watt is with us again tonight. Let me first begin here with our spiritual message, and we'll bring Alan up. This is from Ephesians 6. Beginning with verse 12, well, we'll start with verse 10 here. Finally, my brethren, be strong in the Lord and in the power of his might. Put on the whole armor of God that you may be able to stand against the wiles of the devil. For we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places. Wherefore, take unto you the whole armor of God, that you may be able to withstand in the evil day, and having done all, to stand. Every time I read that, I think about that wrestling, Alan. I mean, we wrestle not against flesh and blood. It is without, it is also within. The wrestling goes on within us.
Yeah.
I know that. I know that. I there's some, first of all, I want to say hello to our very good friend John and his friend Bill and their family who are camping in Allegheny State Park here in Pennsylvania. John is from New York, and he was Chuck's boss, but Chuck's very, very good friend. I was thinking about this tonight. I got a call from John Allen, and they're out camping, and they have their shortwave, and he called to get the coordinates. I hope they can bring it in. It occurred to me they're out there in the woods. But when Chuck passed over, besides for myself and my family, my children and grandchildren, who absolutely adored Chuck, I believe probably, and his family, of course, that John, of his friends, probably was impacted the most of anybody that I know. They were very close. And so I want to say hello, and I hope you guys are listening, John and Bill at least. And Alan, you thank you for being with us tonight.
Yes, of course.
Can you hear me okay?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, you know, I'm getting that fuzzy sound in my headset right now. I wanted to share something with you, with our listeners. I pulled up some email, Alan. In fact, when you called, that's what I was doing. There has been a bill that was passed. It was yesterday, on the 26th. I guess it just came to light today. This came right from the government website, Thomas, where the bills and the status and et cetera. Folks, this is Senate Bill 442. Listen to this, Alan. It's a bill to provide for the Secretary of Homeland Security to be included in the line of presidential succession. Isn't that amazing?
Mm-hmm.
Huh?
That makes sense, though, yeah.
Yeah. Well, this was sponsored for our listeners in Ohio, Senator Mike DeWine of Ohio. And, Alan, it passed the Senate without amendment and with unanimous consent. And, you know...
Well, they'll get their marching orders before it even see it.
Yeah. Michael Chertoff, I have made the statement because I had read it that he had been the former head of the KGB, and I think that it was not Michael Chertoff. I think it was somebody else, an appointee of Bush's. But what I did is I got some information on Chertoff just to clean this up with our listeners because, folks, I'm not confident that he was, as I have said, the former head of the KGB in Russia, but he is a dual Israeli-American citizen, U.S. citizen. He's the son of a rabbi. He's a former assistant attorney general for the criminal division of the Justice Department. I had never heard of him before, Alan. And listen to this. Michael Chertoff, dual Israeli-U.S. citizen, oversees the U.S. Bureau of Citizenship and Immigration. My.
Yeah.
So we can, I guess he's the one that gives the rules for how many of these illegals get to come across the border and et cetera.
That's the whole agenda. Everything is international already, you know. It's just that the public don't know it.
Yeah, well, you know, it makes you wonder what might be up. I mean, what do they know or, you know, whatever is in the plan, wouldn't that be frightening?
Oh, yeah.
Wouldn't that be frightening?
Well, as I say, it's an old plan. Albert Pike talked about it extensively and said that the Freemasonry would be used to push it worldwide. Through revolutionary movements, and it has done so.
Through the revolutionary,
remember,
yes.
Was it Dodds that did the inquiry into the merging of the Soviet system with the American system?
Oh, you're talking about the educational system?
Yeah, well, the whole system altogether, when he did the inquiry to do with...
Norman Dodd.
Yeah, that's right.
Yes.
And, of course, that's what the Ford Foundation told them, that was their job, was to change the culture in such a way that it would blend smoothly with the Soviet system.
As a matter of fact, that was during the time that Congressman B. Carol Reese was holding the congressional hearings. I think that was in the 50s, wasn't it, Alan?
It had to be.
Yeah, the congressional hearings on... The foundations, tax-exempt foundations, and for just further for our listeners, folks, Norman Dodd was one of the. He had some type of position on that committee, but it was the Ford Foundation he went to, Alan.
Yes, uh-huh.
And when he asked to see their meetings of their minutes, folks. And the man told him simply, and this is according to Norman Dodd, the man said, well, I would like to be able to, help you here, but he said that all of our meetings, our minutes, are archived away because he said after our work was done, Alan? Was it after the UN, after the U.S. joined the UN? But he said that their function had been, and they felt that they had completed it, to see that the U.S. could be comfortably merged with the Soviet Union.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you must realize what a gigantic enterprise that was. It meant that the educational system had already been taken over and was working towards that, because most of it's through indoctrination, and of course the bureaucracies. People don't realize that bureaucracies, federal bureaucracies, deal directly with their counterparts at the UN. There's a similar bureaucracy for every level that your federal government has. set up within the UN. So they don't have to go and see representatives. They go straight to the UN. And that's been going on since the League of Nations. H.G. Wells talked about it in 1919. He said that means the bureaucracies and the heads of bureaucracies can deal directly with the League of Nations and bypass all representatives that are elected. So this has been going on for an awful long time.
Who was it that you quoted, the Freemason, about...
Albert Pike.
Pike, right, Albert Pike. I wanted our listeners to know, folks, that the new chapters of the book Jewish Persecution are now posted online. I want to say thank you to Darren for getting it done. At least I sent him over four new chapters, folks. But the ones, if you've read Jewish Persecution up to chapter 16, 17 and 18 are there brand new. And what used to be 17 and 18 had to be moved back, of course, to 19 and 20. But what I don't know, Alan, I've wondered about this. Sometimes this book has sat for weeks without me doing anything on it. And it's been 3 weeks now. It just seemed to grab a hold of me. And I feel pushed to get this, at least this part one, because it's the most important part of the book, concluded. And it occurs to me that we really don't know how much longer websites like sweetliberty.org are going to be able to stay on the Internet. And, folks, what I'm suggesting that you might want to do is download the book. I believe that it is an eye-opener for many people who are maybe just beginning to wake up. I mean, I don't go into the information as deeply as Alan has taken us into ancient history. But, and it made me think about that when he mentioned Albert Pike's quote, because this is what those three chapters, 16, 17, and 18, are related to, are the connection, the Freemasonry, with revolutions, with the American Revolution. And
the English one before that.
Well, with all revolutions, Alan.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what got me looking into it, because of all the reading that I've done, and from their own words, they keep claiming that their hand is behind every revolution, and for some reason. Excuse me, for some reason, I guess because we're so brainwashed, the American Revolution, the war for independence, that was exempt in my mind. That didn't count because that was different. And it was after I finished chapter 12 of the book. Folks, it's online on the very main page as you go into sweetliberty.org. When I finished chapter 12... and realized how their influence in the early colonies and in the Constitutional Convention and et cetera, that was when the question entered my mind, Alan, well, what would make us think if they were behind every revolution that the American Revolution was spontaneous?
Yeah.
And it was a real downer for me.
Mm-hmm.
But, it's like that quote, at least attributed to, what's his name, Patrick Henry. For me, I would know the truth, the painful truth. I would rather know the truth than to continue to live in the lies that we were born into.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, they'd had international meetings before the revolution in America. The leaders of Britain and France and other countries that were empire builders. And, of course, they could only go so far with their own populations who knew darn well that there was a small clique in every capital city running the whole show and benefiting from the wars. And they'd gone as far as they could go, so they had to get a new knight in shining armor to pretend that they were going to lead the world to freedom. And so they created the United States.
The land of the free and the home of the brave.
Yeah, that's what it was for. Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, that's why they said Novus Ordo Seclorum is a new earthly or secular order, and that's bringing in the new world order. And that's what it was designed to do, and all of its symbols are out in the open.
And they refer to the to America as the New World.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
The New World Order. One of the things that I also delved into and convinced myself, and I hope the readers, that it isn't funny. I don't know why I laugh at some of this sick stuff sometimes, Alan. We did not, the Americans did not win that war against Great Britain. And when you look at the treaties, in the first place, that first battle, or the last battle of Yorktown, I believe it was, Cornwallis ceded the battle, but not the war. And it was quite a while after that before a treaty was actually signed. And you see, when you read that treaty, that it was the king that was laying down all the parameters, even to where the colonists could fish, where they could dry their fish, and etc. And then 9 years later, there was another treaty. It's called Jay's Treaty. And Jay, by the way, after he got back from England from agreeing to this thing, was burned in effigy all over the country. And Alexander Hamilton, the king's man, was behind this treaty. But basically, the people even knew, when word got out what he had done, knew that he had sold America out. But 9 years later, they were still, the Britain, England had military bases or forts out west. And they were still doing their trapping all over, you know, where they, just as though it was still their country. And that was 9 years after the so-called War of Independence was won by Americans.
Yeah.
It's really sick, Alan.
Well, when you've got to deceive the people, it has to be real. So you create real wars, but only those at the bottom think it's for the reasons that they're fighting. The guys at the top are well aware that, as Carol Quigley said, wars are fought to change society. It brings about social changes. And sure enough, people swallowed it. They thought they'd won. They worked really hard, thinking they were working for themselves. They built up massive farms everywhere. And of course, it never dawned on them that this hidden priesthood, let's call them, work in centuries, and they knew they could take it all back from them 100 or 200 or 300 years down the road. That's how they planned things. And of course, America was the great hope for all the people who were getting thrown out of countries like Scotland and Ireland en masse at the point of bayonets. And these are the people who came across and started to clear the land and make something that was just wild forest before, and swamps.
But they still had the land barons. When you read Charles Beard's book, An Economic Interpretation of the Constitution, what you realize is that the people who came over here and did all the labor and did the settling, the land that was available for them was not the cream of the crop, because the land barons had already scooped up thousands and thousands of acres of the best land. And
Washington was one of them.
Of course, yes, he was. And people came over here and either had to take the crumbs, so to speak, or pay high dollar to get a decent... And when the movement in America began heading westward, the speculators just went out west and bought up land there.
Yeah.
And so by the time the people got there, once again, these elite had all of the cream of the crop of the land out west.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It's really a come down, you know. Well, here you live in this dream, Alan. You know, the dream, the American dream.
Well, that's what a dream is. It's
of course.
Real.
Although what I realized is this baby is a nightmare.
Yeah, you wake up from the dream into the nightmare.
Into the nightmare, yes.
Yeah. And, no, this is an old scam, and it's been used before in history, and it's simply used again. And after the skirmish, I call it, of 1812, it was Baron Rothschild's son who was sent over to reestablish the border between Canada and the U.S. And he sat down with both sides, and he drew up the 49th parallel. And they love the number 49, you know.
49, and, but what? Why? What does that signify?
It's 9 and 4. 13, that's one of their favorite numbers.
Oh, 9 and 4 is 13.
That's why before most towns you'll see 13 miles or 13 kilometers too.
Hmm.
And that's the last signpost you'll see. It's all Masonic, it's everywhere. You know. And that's the laugh on the public, because most of them don't realize it. They're living in another world designed by another religion. And Albert Pike says that quite definitely two or three times in his own book. He says, make no mistake, Freemasonry is a religion. And it's a very deep religion. And towards the top, it's probably the most elitist religion on the planet. At the bottom, they think it's a self-improvement society. But at the top, you know, it's a world where the elite have the right to live on the schmucks below.
Right.
That's how it's designed.
Right.
Yeah. But no, they set up their another good book to read is The Robber Barons. That's an oldie. And most libraries probably still have a copy. And that tells you how the taxpayer funded the building of the railroads, which were basically handed over to the private companies. And in Canada, most of the politicians all had shares in it. So, once again, the public finances big enterprises.
Who wrote The Robber Barons?
Yeah, I've even got the cartoons.
No, do you remember
who
wrote the book, Alan?
I can't remember his name,
okay.
But it's well documented.
Okay.
And it's got all the names of the participants and the elite families and how they ended up not only getting the railroad tracks built, but they got so many miles on either side of the track for free.
Yes, they did.
And, you know, it's one scam after another. In fact, the Bronfmans came in from Russia in the late 1800s, in the first wave that came from Russia, the 1880, and they just happened to set up out in Saskatchewan way. And sure enough, eventually along comes the railroads going right through their land. And this very, very poor farming family, we're told.
Yeah.
Who probably did no farming at all. And whose name in Yiddish just happens to mean whiskey man. That's
oh,
what Bronfman.
Bronfman, you're kidding me.
No, that's what the name means, yeah.
In Yiddish?
So it's all coincidence, of course, you know. Anyway, they got the rights to all the hotels and whorehouses along the railroad track. And then, of course, they bribed every politician. They had prohibition passed in the States, and they smuggled all the booze into the States, and they shared that with the Kennedys in the U.S. So, and then, of course, after they finished prohibition on the U.S. side, they bribed all the politicians in Canada to then pass it in Canada. So they simply reversed the flow of the booze. It's just one gigantic scam after another, you know. And that's what history's made up of. And, of course, these families end up as multimillionaires.
Story.
Yeah. They end up as multimillionaires, and they're in politics, and the people bow to them, you know. The ordinary people bow to them. And they're nothing but gangsters, you know. That's all they are. Just gangster families. Yeah. That is the history, you know. That's what history is all about. It's just one scam after another. And there's no way that George of England had anything to do with American Revolution, because
right.
George of England was mad as a hatter.
Well, it was, according to the bio on Chaim Salomon, the hero of the American Revolution. I know I said this last night, but it bears repeating. In one of his bios, it says that he went to France and secured a huge sum of money from the Rothschilds to help finance the revolution.
Mm-hmm.
Alan.
And the British Rothschild financed the British side.
Yep.
That's how it works. It's amazing to watch this con game going on. And what's even more amazing is that the monarchy in France helped the Americans with the revolution because England had made so many plays to take over France in its history that the monarchy weren't on very good terms. And then, of course, once the American Revolution was over, it started in France. They deposed the monarchy that helped them, and it's interesting that France, even though it was taken over under a new system, still had to pay that loan back. America still had to pay the loan back to the brand new type of government that still stood. And that's what's amazing. Even when governments change from one form to another, it does not affect the owing of money or the legal paying back of
exactly.
money that must still be done.
That was part of the treaties that were agreed to after the war, the revolution, the American Revolution, that the British subjects whose property had been seized by the government had to give the property back to the British. To the British, and they did not have to become American citizens, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Are you hearing that barking in the background?
Yeah.
Okay, well, you know what I'd like to do? We're about to take a break, and why don't you take this time, the next few minutes, and tell our listeners about your books, how they can get them, and then I'm going to go and take care of that barking. She's wanting in this room is what she wants, Alan. So I'm going to be off mic till after the break.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. I have three books dealing with Freemasonry, ancient Freemasonry. Freemasons are the term that's used today is a recent term. So I go through the history of it, way beyond the guilds of England of the Middle Ages, much earlier than that. And I also go through the history up to the present times and show you what's going on. And I also give you a lot of the Masonic coding, which is all around us. And if you want any of these books, they're $25 each. That's payable in U.S. Postal order, international postal order, which you can get at your post office. And if you want it, one or all of them, send the international postal order to, it's Alan Watt, which is W-A-T-T, and the address is Site 41, that's S-I-T-E, 41, Box 4, Estaire, which is E-S-T-A-I-R-E, Ontario, Canada. And the postal code is P for Peter, 3, E for Elizabeth, 4, N for Nora, 1. And I'll do that again. It's Alan Watt, W-A-T-T, Site 41, S-I-T-E, 41, Box 4, Estaire, which is E-S-T-A-I-R-E, Ontario, Canada, and the postal code is P for Peter, 3, E for Elizabeth, 4, N for Nora, 1. And anyone wanting to phone me and I can answer some questions for you, my phone number is...
You're listening to FirstAmendmentRadio.com worldwide. Freedom is never free. We need your support today at FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
Now listen to me. The Bible says, render unto Caesar that which is Caesar's. I want you to know that a corporation is Caesar.
Government takeover of the church. This DVD is the most powerful tool we have for waking up those asleep in the pews. The scripture calls for his people to come out of her. The corporate church is the apostate church, the whore that rides the beast. Get this DVD for a donation of $25 from FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Make copies and give them away to your corporate church friends and loved ones. The truth will make them free. They will watch the DVD, Government Takeover of the Church. Order online today at FirstAmendmentRadio.com or call 559-781-3773. Who will tell them if not you?
Roll away the dawn.
You have been listening to Jackie Petrou's Sweet Liberty program on the First Amendment Radio Network. This broadcast is also archived and audio streamed on the internet at FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Sweet Liberty is a fully listener-sponsored program. Your donations to support these broadcasts are a necessity. Send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, P.A. 16936. Again, send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, P.A. 16936. Be sure to visit the sweetliberty.org website. Thank you for your continued support. And stay tuned to FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
Okay, we're back with Alan Watt. Alan, did you let our listeners know, because I wasn't at the headset, the money order that, you know, et cetera? Did you get that all? Do you, because the music was playing, do you want to just repeat that part and give your phone number again?
Sure. Yeah. So, yeah, it's $25 for each copy. That's international postal order, which you get from your post office. And the address is Alan Watt, W-A-T-T. It's Site 41. S-I-T-E 41, Box 4, Estaire, which is E-S-T-A-I-R-E, Ontario, Canada, and postal code is P for Peter, 3, E for Elizabeth, 4, N for Nora, 1. That's P-3-E-4-N-1. Thank you. And my phone number is 705-695-0416 for anyone who has any questions I could help them with.
This was my own private little joke, and I won't say it.
Uh-huh.
I'm sorry. The thought came to me that maybe you would like somebody to call up and witness to you, Alan.
Oh, yeah. That's all I need, yeah.
I know. That was...
Yeah.
I'm sorry. So, where do we go from here?
Well, it's a matter of... the problem on the shortwave, as we all know, is that we're either preaching to the choir or we're preaching to people who have recently woken up and have looked around for other alternate means of news. And it's not an easy thing to handle when you've just woken up. Seldom do two people in a family wake up at the same time, and that often is the main problem that I hear, is that one's woken up and they're asking how to deal either with their spouse or their extended family. And I tell them generally that they have to learn to live inside their head, because if the other person hasn't woken up, there's going to be a tremendous conflict there. And
Live inside their head?
Yeah, in other words, the thoughts that they have, the knowledge that they have, rather than keep repeating it or sharing it with a partner who has their fingers in their ears, it's best to learn to live inside your head in that situation, because you can't make a person wake up who's not ready for it. No matter how much documented evidence you have, they have to be almost spiritually ready for it, you know. So you'll get a lot of conflict because they want the old person back, the person that was quite happy with their life or quite happy with the way things were, and went to work for their 8 hours a day and watched TV when they came home. That's what they want back, and it scares them when the one who's awake, it scares their partner to see them becoming animated, you might say. Sometimes people panic, in fact, when they realize it's all a con game, and they realize where this is all leading to. That's probably something that's never been discussed on the shortwave, is how to deal with that situation.
And
those who do wake up tend to be very, very alone. And as I say, if they have a tremendous burning desire to share their knowledge, and it's always with the person next to them. And if that person, as I say, is not ready for it, there's going to be tremendous conflict. And of course, they'll be called nuts and all the rest of it. And it might even lead to divorce, in fact.
Unless the person who has awakened has an ability, as you said, to live in their head.
Yeah, you almost have to be two people. The person they're used to, the person they expect you to be, and the one you really are, you have to almost hide this now, because although it's impossible to go back, that's the other thing. You can't go back to watching sports or whatever you used to do to pass the time. You realize everything is there to either indoctrinate or to make you pass the time without thinking. So you can never go totally back. But on the other hand, you have to realize that you're now awake and those around you are fast asleep. And you cannot, simply by giving them information, wake them up. It doesn't work that way, you know. They have to have something inside themselves to make them ready to wake up. And you cannot do that for another person, you know.
Eventually. I'm not saying it will happen, but the possibility of it happening, maybe. In fact, a long time ago we were talking about this. The brainwashing has been so intense, and the mind control. And my question was, because what we, quote, know or think we know, all of the information that comes into the brain forms a pathway, and those pathways are there. And my question in my mind was, can you replace what's already in that pathway that has erroneous information, or does it have to be short-circuited? And my guess was it would take a short circuit. And when I asked you your opinion of that, that's exactly what you said, that it would have to be short-circuited. And then my next question, of course, was, how would that happen? And you said, unfortunately, for these people, it has to be something that hits them personally.
Yeah, it's a crisis of some kind.
Uh-huh.
And yet again, in a marriage situation, often it'll go the other way. The crisis will occur, but the person will often choose, because there's a choice involved here too, to remain in the life that they're familiar with, because it seems more comfortable to believe in it all, even though things are crazy with prices and all the rest of it. They still want to believe they're being taken care of, because if they know themselves, if they start to believe this and check into it, which they're scared to do, they'd have to rethink everything they've ever known. And that terrifies them, utterly terrifies them. And so they risk a nervous breakdown to come into another reality. And so often that they'll choose the divorce instead. So that's the conflict that arises. And of course, if there's more family members involved, they might just gang together and demand a visit to the psychiatrist even. That also happens to some people.
Is that right?
Me. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because it's too terrifying for them to start rethinking everything they've ever learned. It's too terrifying for them to say, my God, that means that every newscaster, every famous face on television is there to fool me. They cannot go that way, you know.
And it goes way beyond that.
Dan Rather's.
Alan, it begins when we're born.
Yeah.
Because our parents were lied
Didn't
to,
know.
The same that we were lied to, and
yeah.
So we live in literally in a dream world.
It's a Disneyland.
Yeah, exactly.
And also, I mean, what they did along thousands of years ago, they studied all mammals. And mammals all behave in the same fashion as humans. You know, we are another mammal. And what you find is if there's a crisis or something threatens the little family of mammals, the females run into the middle for protection. The males automatically form a perimeter to protect. And if they're attacked, then the males all go off to war, you might say, and try and beat whatever the intruder is. And that works exactly the same way with human beings. The women traditionally look towards the men for protection in a rather violent world. And today that they're bypassing the husband, of course, because this is the final stage of this system, this part of the system. They're bypassing the husband, and now government is directly dictating to the wives with regard to, you know, feminism and all the rest of it. And government is appealing and saying, well, we're here to protect you. That's our job. And of course, they're giving their power to the government. They give their power to the beast, the one that promises to protect them. And effectively, the husbands are being bypassed. And this was all done by design because, as I say, they understand mammal behavior and they know how to interfere with the normal flow of it. So we actually are the most studied species on the entire planet, human beings. And they know
how to
manipulate
the males, Alan,
and the females.
Who are these creatures that are studying, quote, human beings?
Well, these creatures themselves claim, as I say, they have their own inner religion, and they do claim that they were rebels in a spirit world. And I hate the word spirit because spirit means drunk. You know, you drink spirits to get drunk. And that's why they gave us this term in English language from the Latin.
What would the word be if it wasn't in the English language?
It's the true essence of what is you, what you are.
Okay.
The true essence is beyond the physical. And these creatures do claim that they were cast out after a rebellion of some kind. Now, people can call it whatever they want, a cosmic rebellion, dimensional, whatever it is. But the fact is they believe that they were so perfect in this other form, this ethereal form, non-material, you might say, that they willed their own physical bodies into existence. And there were already natural people living here, that's what they claim, but they themselves willed their bodies into existence. And because they did that, the first generation retained these supernatural powers. And when they started to interbreed with the people who were natural to the planet, they began to lose these powers, and hence there was a speedy return to interbreeding amongst themselves to try and regain those powers. And from then on, they've kept their genealogical lines going as far back as, well, we don't even have access to them. It's beyond and before Sumer, before 5000 BC. But that's the reason for the intense interbreeding that still goes on today, and the priesthood that matches them up for those bloodlines is very, very important. It still exists.
That's why we have all the begats in the Old Testament.
Yep. Yes.
Who begat who?
Yeah, even though it's all nonsense in the Old Testament, the Old Testament was a manufactured fallacy. It's actually a book of a system. That's what it teaches. Every Masonic lodge has that black book of law. That's what it is in their lodge. And it's a system with esoteric meanings. It's not real people. It's they use the names of people to teach stories, esoteric meanings behind the stories. That's what it's for. But it was put together by definitely descendants of these fallen ones, you might say, in Egypt, and everyone agrees about this. 72 priests wrote the Old Testament around 300, maybe even 200 BC in Egypt, and they wrote it in the language of the Coptic Greek, and it was never translated into supposed Hebrew, which is just updated Aramaic, until about the first century AD. So even in the time of Jesus, if he did read anything in the synagogue, he must have read it in the Greek version, because that's all they had at that time. And so it wasn't written by Hebrews. It was written by another people altogether, for the people who believed themselves to be Jews.
And I'd like to make a connection here, where you mentioned that the Old Testament, it really a book of laws. That is something that I realized as I was writing Jewish Persecution, that the Old Testament is literally a political program that is wrapped in a cloak of religion. And Moses, the first five books, I guess it depends on who is saying this. You'll read that the first five books of the Old Testament are the Torah, which is the basis of the Talmud, and then some say that it's the entire Old Testament. But whatever, Moses Mendelssohn, who was evidently a very respected and revered wise man, Jew, made the statement that Judaism is not a religion, it is a law religionized.
Yeah, it's a very pragmatic system.
Yep.
Really, that's what it is. It's a system. In the Old Testament, slavery is okay. There's no laws against slavery.
And it's God who's demanding it, all the wars.
Yeah, it's the Godfather. It's a mafia system, you know. That's what it's all about. That's what the whole world is all about. That's what all empires have always been about. It's a small elite being gangsters and lording it over the other people, living off the backs of the other people, and hiring the historians to write a nice story about them. You know, that's what history is all about. And it's all to do with this thing called money, without which none of this could occur. None of it. You could not hire an army without money. You couldn't keep men together long enough to invade anybody if you didn't have this thing called money. Money itself is an artificial creation. And we think it's quite natural because we're born into a system that completely revolves around this thing called money. And we are actually called economic units. You know,
actually, we are called human capital, Alan.
Yep.
Human capital.
Yes, right.
And I just want to say this for our listeners. If you haven't read the article, folks, you could go into the children's section at sweetliberty.org, and there is an article there titled, Are Your Children Human Capital? And it is literally, it has been discovered that that's exactly what we are to them, as you just said, Alan. And then after I found that article. I found the executive order that Bill Clinton had signed, where he created a commission to study capital, all kinds of capital, and in that it was including human capital. And the commission was to report on the depreciation of capital. And, of course, my question was, how do you depreciate human capital?
You make them sick and you give them diseases.
Yeah, you get rid of them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Which is happening in Africa on a wide scale, and it's actually happening more subtly in the Western countries. As we discussed last night with the sperm count plummeting in the males, all by design.
And the women having hysterectomy.
Yeah, hysterectomy. And here's the problem. People keep thinking or asking, well, when is all this going to happen? They don't realize it's been happening before they were born, and it's been happening all through their lifetime.
Yeah.
There's a population control council in the United Nations. Before that, the League of Nations also had the same council. And they don't sit on their hands making wish lists of how to control the population of the world. They actually implement schemes to do so. And, of course, we're told they just make mistakes with inoculations. They didn't realize that the polio vaccine would affect the human race the way it has, cause all the tumors and sterility and so on. It's just a mistake. And then in Africa, they gave all the free smallpox vaccinations out, and they didn't change the needles. And lo and behold, the trail of AIDS all through Africa.
Are you sure that...
And again, it's another big mistake.
Are you sure that AIDS virus or whatever it was wasn't in the vaccines that they gave to the Africans?
Oh, I've no doubt it would be in it.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I've no doubt. They started actually the same program in Haiti, and that's where the AIDS first broke out. And then they went over to Western Africa, and you can follow the trail from the UN free smallpox vaccine.
I've got.
So this is going on. The agenda is underway. They can't come out and tell you, oh, by the way, we're killing you. I think they'd have their hands full with upset populations. So they simply don't tell you. They do it.
Well, yes, they do tell us. And I'm going to mention the toothpaste again.
Mm-hmm.
On the toothpaste tube, unless you get your toothpaste, you know, fluoride-free, because fluoride is a killer. But there on the toothpaste tube, there is the warning that says, keep out of reach of children under six. And if you swallow more than enough for brushing, seek medical help or call a poison center immediately. And, Alan, that's the thing that just blows me away, because I have showed that to so many people, and they just, it doesn't compute that they're paying for their poison.
Yeah, but they still believe they're being taken care of, and they cannot believe that anything would be so widely advertised and promoted that would harm them. See, they live in two different worlds.
Then it's time that people suddenly, somewhere, somehow, snap out of it, Alan, and really take a look.
It's going fast, and you see how autism has skyrocketed up till the present statistics. And it's all to do with the inoculations they're giving the babies.
It's the mercury. It's the mercury in the vaccine.
Oh, yeah. They know it, too.
The marisol and fluoride.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So they know this. It's a program, a population control program. And Joe Public thinks, well, we've got spontaneous autism now. It's just a plague of autism.
1,700% increase in autism.
Yeah. And, of course, the old autism that used to be here prior to the 50s was one in about 10,000 or 25,000, it was, true autism. And that means that from the time of the baby's birth, it did not react normally to stimulation and so on. whereas this type of autism that comes only occurs after the inoculation.
There's something I'd like to say.
All the doctors know this.
There's something I'd like to say here right now, because we haven't said this in a long time. I haven't. Folks, when you have your children in school, in order for them to be in school, there is a required vaccines that they have to have at particular grades, and every single state has opt-out for parents. All they have to do is sign a form, and in fact, you know, when I finally got through to Nicole in Missouri, and she was she did a lot of research, found the law, and was calling the school, that was the first day of school this past year, to let them know that she was not going to vaccinate Ashley. It might have been a year before. But anyway, she said that she was on the way to pick up the form that she had had faxed to her at to a Staples from, you know, the health department in Missouri. And the school secretary said, well, honey, we've got these forms right here. You know, Nicole was ready for a real fight, and all she had to do was walk in to the office and say, I want the opt-out form, and that's what she did.
Yeah.
And I want, folks, listen to me, all of you who have children in schools, if you vaccinate your child after hearing what we just talked about, then there is something very, very, very wrong. I don't know what else to say about that, but I wanted that known to any of our possibly new listeners, Alan.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I have to vaccinate him. That's what Nicole was telling me. I have to vaccinate her or she can't go to school.
Yeah.
And I talked to Ashley and I said, Ashley, honey, don't do it. Don't let them vaccinate you. And you just tell them no. And that's what basically what Ashley did. She said, I'm not going to get it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, everything is done under pretense and color of law, but in fact, it's just a matter of bluff.
It's a matter
of
bluff.
And the willing fool, as they say in masonry, if you're a willing fool, you've swallowed it all and believe it all, you'll go and take it, you see.
Yes, Alan,
but
we're
it's
out.
It's up to the person who thinks to ask the questions and demand the opting out.
Thank you. Folks, there's a lot of information at our website at sweetliberty.org. If you go into the issues section, if you have children, go into the children's section. A lot of this is there. And, Alan, thank you so much for being with us again this evening.
Yeah.
And, ladies and gentlemen, we'll see you back on Monday. And thank you. And God bless you. Good night. Alan, would you stay on the phone?
Sure.
Okay, thank you. Good night, folks.
Roll away the dough.
You have been listening to Jackie Petrou's Sweet Liberty program on the First Amendment Radio Network. This broadcast is also archived and audio streamed on the internet at firstamendmentradio.com. Sweet Liberty is a fully listener-sponsored program. Your donations to support these broadcasts are a necessity. Send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, PA 16936. Again, send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, PA 16936. Be sure to visit the sweetliberty.org website. Thank you for your continued support. And stay tuned to firstamendmentradio.com.
The opinions expressed are those of the hosts and guests, and are not necessarily those of the First Amendment Radio Network or its affiliated radio stations.
If you read the history books, the most often asked question to Southerners was this: why did you fight? And the most often given answer is, because you're here.